The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good evening, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to try this thing again on a Wednesday night. Matthew, how you doing?
Good. I'm just making sure Amart's hat's on straight.
It's always crooked. My hat's always crooked.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I want to let everybody know the interview that we did this morning, I'm going to try and piece together some of the segments that we had this morning before Matt's phone went haywire or something happened. I'm not really sure what went down on that, but it was a great, great interview this morning. And Aaron, a lot of people on the instant feedback, they're happy that you're doing the evening show because they have more questions for you.
All right. Love questions.
All right. Now, I have a couple of questions that I'm going to start off with. The first thing is I really want to know, have you seen this sensation that was happening in Las Vegas with the grasshoppers?
I followed it on the news and heard about it, but I never saw a visual on that. No, it happened. The grasshoppers, they had a swarm. I've seen it. I've been there when it's done that. I've actually personally been there when there's grasshoppers everywhere. You had to step on them and walk to the
hotel.
Like
when you were there for the U.S. Open?
One of the U.S. Opens or one of the Wombat tournaments I went through, they had a major swarm. Yeah, locusts, grasshoppers. They come in like this, millions of them.
It's great. Where? Big migration, right there on the strip.
Well, it's because of the moisture that they've received out there, and their population explodes. And then I guess it starts to dry or something, the conditions change, and they swarm. And it's like that's what happened last time we saw them like that.
Yeah, now as a result of this, somebody has decided to put together a pizza that features grasshoppers.
Oh, that's smart. Great idea. I'd try it.
That's what I want to know. Would you partake?
Oh, yeah.
What's that noise? Do you hear that noise, Mark?
No, I have no idea.
Sounds like locusts, doesn't it? We have our own sound studio.
I mean, who wouldn't want to have a pizza with little bugs all over it? That sounds really good.
Come on, man. Seriously?
I don't know if I'd eat it. I mean, I'm sure it's good. I've eaten grasshoppers before. Another insect.
All right. All right.
I mean, grubs. Yeah, that's easy.
What are they doing, Matthew?
You'll find out in a couple minutes in the next segment.
All right.
You'll
see. All right. A lot of people want to know a lot of technique stuff, and we're going to get to it. Jeez. Tell them to cut that out. That's irritating the fire out of me. Jeez.
Winona locust swarm.
It's another insect lover.
Man. All right. I want to reflect back, and this was one of the questions that I had this morning that we didn't get to. In the vintage years, that's what I call them, you were one of the superstars to participate and be a part of the Crown Royal team in the beginning. How cool was that? And Aaron, was that really kind of the heyday of the whole team concept and the team idea?
That was the beginning that I know of. I don't remember anything like that happening before. That was godsend. I mean, it was an alcohol company, and I didn't really drink. But that was like, without that, I don't know if I would have made it out here when I did. I maybe had to wait a few more years. I didn't have the funds to come out here and do that. And that came up out of the blue. I don't know if I told you the story about this, but when John Curry called me for the first time, he got my number from somebody. I had Brian Linehan, Kevin Linehan. I don't know if you heard of those guys. They worked with Mercury.
Yeah.
Yeah, they joked around like crazy. I had a bunch of friends that were like jokers. And they called me. I thought they were calling me and pranking me. And it was John Curry, but I didn't know this. But he was telling me about this big deal, Crown Rail. You get a truck and a wrap. We're going to wrap it in the vinyl, which has like never been done. The boat was going to be wrapped in vinyl. The truck was going to be painted purple and white, so it looked really sharp. And I thought it was all a joke. It sounded so good there. There's no way this is real. And when I hung up with John Curry, he's all, we'll keep in contact. I'll call you all this. And I hung up with him. I thought it was like total, like made up. So I just kind of laughed about it. And then like 5 minutes later, not even that, John Curry called me again. He's like, I had a feeling that you thought this was like maybe a joke, but I'm for real. And I started thinking, but at that point it didn't sound like somebody was joking. It sounded like, this is for real. We're offering this to you. That's how it happened though. It was amazing. I think my wife was actually there when I took the call, but it was one of those moments where at that point I knew I've made it. Like maybe I have made it to pro level. I can be able to travel and go back east and fish against the big guns. That was that moment for me for sure.
What year was that? Do you remember?
It was like around 2000 something, early 2000s, 2001. I'm not 2002. Sure. 2002.
And then who else was there? Was Ski?
No, Ski came on later. It was me.
Peter T.
Peter T. And Alan Armour, I think. And there was a few guys that came in kind of after, but I think that it started. I hope I didn't lose somebody out, but it started really small, and then down the line we got Skeet Reese on there and a few other guys. And but it was amazing. I mean, it was almost too much sometimes, like driving from California to, I lived in California then, but driving across the desert, I got pulled over, I know, because of the truck.
Oh, because you had
I got pulled over all the time. And it wasn't, I wasn't like a speeder, I wasn't obsessive, but I got pulled over and harassed probably a half dozen times because of that rig by cops. Not breaking any laws, didn't get a ticket, they just checked me out. And went through my truck. I had to sit with a couple troopers in their vehicles. Maybe they thought I was intoxicated. I don't know.
Wow.
Especially Texas, I had to say. I got pulled over like 3 or 4 times in Texas.
You still have a jersey? You still have one of those jerseys?
Oh, yeah. I got all the jerseys still. Anybody want to buy any?
You know what? I guarantee people will take them up because I got a buddy who's got one of the Crown Royal jerseys. And
I have all my jerseys, I think, from that vault days. That deal turned into a vault deal later, which is a really big deal. That's Coca-Cola Company. I think I have my – I think I saved at least one jersey. I mean, that's cool to keep that stuff, I think.
Heck yeah. Yeah. That's a good question, Mark. I got to hand it to you.
All right. I've always wanted to know that because that was one of the coolest things that I saw was – and I think it was 2002 – it was really kind of that first repping of a company that was outside of the fishing industry.
And yeah, it started kind of like a boom after that.
Yeah.
It worked out. It was so good for them, and the way the wraps looked, and it just from there, it kind of, it was the thing to do with bass fishing.
Yeah. All right, Matt, I want to get to the instant feedback because there were a lot of questions out there from this morning that have kind of carried over to this evening. And I'm going to start with David in Wisconsin. He wants to know, when you have a bad event, is there like a home lake that you consider your home lake to go back and try to build up your confidence?
Yeah, mine's the Delta. I mean, you're talking about like a place that you struggled at and then came back later. Is that what you're talking about?
No, he wants to know, if you have a bad event.
And you go home.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, just need to wail on them.
What I like to do, for sure, I used to do a lot in the past, is especially when I struggled on a lake in a certain tournament, even on the West Coast, I'd like to go out after the tournament was over. And, you know, Shasta, wherever it be, Clear Lake, Oroville, Delta, you know, even Havasu and Lake Mead. When I did bad, and when I did really good, I didn't want to really go out there again. It's funny, but when I, the worst I did, the more I wanted to go out and figure them out, I guess. So that was bad English on that one?
No, I was getting a text from someone off screen.
So yeah, I figured, you know, if you do bad, you want to try to kind of see what you did wrong. That kind of work. That's how fishing is. You gotta learn. If you just go home, you'll never know.
Good point.
Which takes a lot of, I mean, after you don't catch them. I want to go home. I don't want to see that lake again. I want to fill it with cement.
Yeah, yeah.
So it takes a little bit to want to go back out. I mean, you really got to have a lot of want to.
Yeah, I did that quite a bit. Go out there and kind of try to learn your mistakes.
All right. TJ in North Carolina wants to know, for finesse swim baits, ball head or cone head style jig head?
Cone head.
The Tella.
Cone head. What's a cone head?
I like the one that's shaped like.
Yeah, like a fish head, torsorta.
Yeah.
I like both. I use like 3 different kinds. I can push my sponsor a little bit, but I use the Picasso stuff. He's got a really cool tungsten ball head, and a lot of sizes, all the way up to like a 1/2 ounce. But it's tiny. A 1/2 ounce is like throwing a 1 ounce. It's crazy how dense it is. But his little ball head's awesome. It's got some of the weed guards on it. That's good for finesse. But when I get into the bigger stuff, I still like a fish, kind of a fish shaped head. He's got one called the Smart Mouth. He's got a good keeper on. That's the one I throw most of the time. And it usually, a quarter, 3/8, and 1/2 ounce are the three sizes I throw the most in that. Over the years, when I fish at the lakes we go to.
Is that what you had tied on today?
That's why I caught him on at Table Rock. That's why I caught him on at St. That's where I catch him on.
But was that the one you had on today on the deck? That one.
Yeah, that was a quarter ounce.
That's kind of a cone head.
It's kind of a cone head.
It's like a hybrid.
It's like a fish shape. Kind of a fish more shape head. That's probably my favorite overall, especially in the bigger heads.
All right, Cole in Indiana wants to know, what do you prefer, a 4.5 over a 3-inch Robo Ned Worm? Which one?
What was the first one?
4.5.
Before we get to this question,
the big Ned Worm.
But don't answer this question yet. If you notice, we're a little distracted. I'm going to take the computer and show you what we're working with right here. This motley crew that is watching it. We have Russ. We have Drew Cook. We have Bowster. Can you see all that? We have Jeff Creed. And then directly behind the screen is Michael Neal just giving us a cold, hard stare down. So go ahead and continue with the technique-specific questions, but just know
I'm being tested.
That we're being
listened to by ultimate pros. They're ready there.
I got you. All right.
What was the question
so
again?
So Cole in Indiana wants to know, what does Aaron prefer, a 4.5 over a 3-inch Robo Ned Worm?
Well, that's pretty easy. The forage is the most important thing. You know, like fall time, a lot of times they'll use a little bit smaller baits because of a lot of the fish they're eating, or a lot of the, whatever they're eating, it's a smaller size. But I know in spring I throw a lot of bigger stuff into the spawn, even the post spawn. But usually late summer, fall, I usually kind of downsize. But, you know, if you're in a lake that, like Texas, for instance, or somewhere like that, you know, Gunnersville, that big worm's probably going to be a better bet. But if you're somewhere like Table Rock or, you know, a clear body or a lake similar to that, you know, something small usually is best.
All right. Mike wants to know if you could bring back one discontinued lure, what would it be?
One discontinued lure. Oh, shoot. I have to be careful when I say that, too.
What if you just don't
feel better? Oh, maybe I'm working on something.
Say a snag with salad.
No.
Twin cadiddle skipper.
Ooh, the twin cadiddle skipper? That's a Crete suggestion.
A squeaky dolphin. I can't even think of the guys giving me suggestions. I can't even think about that. What would be a killer bait? I mean, you can bring it. The problem is you can bring just about anything back, and maybe I already have.
The Dance Eel.
Oh, that's a good one, Dancing Eel. But I never threw the Dancing Eel or the Porco.
That was a good one, though.
I had a helicopter lure at one point. I never threw it. I don't think. Did I?
Yeah,
I don't know.
The U.S. Open on it, remember?
U.S. Open. The Roland Martin one.
Aaron did not win the U.S. Open on the helicopter lure, Jeff. Jeez.
How was it
I guess one of the all-time greats, even though I got a really good Rialis crankbait sponsor and all that, but is like the Wiggle Warts. The original Wiggle Warts is the Speed Trap, original Speed Traps, but they still make a Speed Trap just about as good. But the Wiggle Wart, the new ones, they just never seem to match the old ones.
Here's a problem with that question, Mark. You got Aaron and a bunch of guys here who use
there's more guys now.
Don't want to say anything because that basically means they're giving it away, and then it drives the prices up on eBay.
Then you can't find a balance anymore.
And we went through that with the balsa bait and swindle, remember?
Yeah. Hey, Tim wants to know if you've ever caught a fish on a jig and pig.
Yeah. California is crazy awesome. Like Castaic, Casitas, all the lakes in California, for about 3-4 months a year, that's all I threw is pig and jig.
Really?
I used to catch anywhere from 30 to 60, 80 fish a day. Lake Casitas, you'd catch about 30, 40 a day, but you'd have about 40 to 50 pound limit in February, and you'd catch like lots of value. You go there during the week, I used to guide there, you'd catch them like unreal.
Wait, did you just say 40 to 50
pound limits every day? It was like, I can't even, like, you guys don't believe me, whatever. They got little pictures. They don't believe me, but yeah, Castaic was the same way for a while. You know, my, this was the 90, 95.
That's right, a 10 pound average.
Yeah, but that's how big they were in that lake.
Every day?
Yeah, like at least 30. I mean, that's minor. I mean, a good day was 40 to 50 pounds.
You gotta be careful when you're claiming to catch giant fish out of California.
There were schools. Yeah, I know. I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But the lakes I grew up on back then were like, they were untapped, and you'd have like 40, 50. It wasn't uncommon to see 40 or 50 fish follow your swim bait up, and they'd be all 6 pound plus. And it was just, the lakes were amazing. If you caught 40 or 50 fish on a good day, you'd have a 40 pound bag, 30 to 40 pound bag. And if you fish night tournaments, if you didn't have 30 pounds, a lot of times you didn't weigh them. So, I mean, the lake was full of 8 and 10 pounders, and that's not exaggerating. Probably Clear Lake, I probably had one day, I probably had 55.
In a tournament?
No.
What's the biggest you've ever weighed fishing in, like just a weekend or night?
42 pounds I had in the bass tournament at Falcon. In a team tournament on the West Coast, I didn't fish too many of them. There's a lot of pro-ams I fished, and I've had quite a few 30. I don't know if I ever caught a 40-pound bag in a tournament.
I would remember if I caught a 40-pound bag.
High 20s, a lot of those.
All right.
And I didn't know how to fish back then. The lakes were just that good. They were full of big ones. That's all it was. Just full of big fish. Average fish is probably 5 pounds in some of those lakes at times that you catch during the day.
Wow. All right. Pat wants to know, what's the dirtiest water that you've caught fish on a drop shot?
Dirtiest water? Probably Arkansas River when I was catching them on the bank, pitching it. I mean, maybe it was like 6 inches.
Is that the one that Denny won?
When they all came in late.
Yeah, that was the one that Denny won.
Like a lot of the river got, it was pretty churned up.
What about Denny Brower? Sabine?
I mean, it's 3-4 inches. I mean, I haven't really thrown it in like really dirty water, but they'll eat it in like a couple inches of visibility.
Weren't you like drop shotting the bridge pilings right in front of the deal, and everyone else was running like two pools down?
I was pitching the bank with it.
But you were just like right there.
Like a 6 mile stretch, I think. Yeah. I was fishing that city part. But just pitching on the bank, short leader, like a 2-inch leader, shaking it, and they'd get it. They can feel it. It's got vibration. Especially, right? Short leader. Remember the short leader, like bouncing a basketball? It's a lot of vibration. You can sit there and kind of rattle it. They get it. They can feel it.
Interesting.
My leader's about 2 feet too long.
Well, this time of year, you use a long leader, yeah. All right.
All right, let's see here. David.
There's like twice as many people now. That's crazy.
Yeah. David in Wisconsin wants to know, let's see here. What does Aaron notice running the Mercury 4-stroke versus the 2-stroke?
The 4-strokes, I don't want to make anybody feel bad. It's got a 2-stroke, but the new 4-stroke is like, it's not even comparable to the 2-stroke. It's a different motor completely. It's kind of like going from a gas motor in a pickup truck to a diesel. The low end torque on it, and like the graph ability, like when you're graphing a spot or when you're spinning around real quick, the efficiency of it is, I mean, just to be able to spin around super quick and let off the gas and get in there line on a point or something, it's so much quicker. It's when you turn the boat in a 90 or go back around, it gets up a pad like almost immediately, so you can almost like spin the boat around. So, I mean, it does everything kind of better. I mean, it seems. And I've noticed on the fuel economy, it's been no different than my 2-stroke, which is amazing because 2-strokes, you got to carry oil. And so you are bringing a little extra liquid. It seems like the gas goes the same as it did on the 2-stroke. So, I mean, everything about it, just so far, no problems. Very strong motor, fast. I'm impressed.
I think a lot of people are. All right.
It runs them out. I've never heard anything bad about that motor at all.
All right, very cool. This morning, I mentioned a quote in a recent story about you think you are at the peak of your game. And I want to get into that a little bit. And you said, with all my experience and all my knowledge and everything that I've done, right now is when I'm at my peak. Why do you say that? I mean, were you not at your peak 10 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know if you ever do peak. I mean, obviously, you must go down somewhere, right? You get older, you slow down, maybe your thought process gets a little slower. You just get older, you age, your body's worn out. You know, a lot of guys I know getting surgeries and You know, because I grew up.
That was just a cheap shot at Creed.
Wow.
That was unnecessary.
Not mentally, but physically.
Yeah,
go ahead and throw the knees comment in next.
But over the years, I hear about that. I hear about like surgeries going on, and it's tough sport on your body, mentally and physically. You're gone from home all the time. My daughter turned 16 in just a couple weeks. I'll make it home just in time for her 16th birthday. I missed my wife's birthday.
Did you get her car?
Yesterday.
What'd you get her?
I did. It's sort of different than that.
What'd you get? Oh, you don't want to say it's
no,
a secret?
No, it's a Jordan. Secret. Jordan, I'm going to get her something like a, it's going to be a, some kind of reptile. But I got to find out and get her something that she can take care of.
Oh, yeah. I asked if you got her a car.
I forgot. She doesn't. No, she's got a car. She'll have one.
She has.
She's going to get mommy's car.
Okay.
But my daughter's into snakes and reptiles and arachnids. She likes.
What are you going to get?
Probably.
Like a rose-haired tarantula or a Gila monster?
She's got like three snakes, and she just picked up a lizard yesterday, a blue-tongued skink.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah, it's like a little baby. Yeah. And she's got scorpions and tarantulas, too.
All in the house.
And she holds them. Yeah, that's fine. I'm good with animals like that. Insects. Arachnids. She'll get offended if I say that. Because I guess a spider is not an insect. I got in trouble for that.
No, they have an exoskeleton.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just saying insect. So it is a little crawly bug.
She would love that new lure from Lunker Hunt.
And she loves a fish, too. It doesn't get better than that. She's actually doing the high school stuff, so pretty cool. My son, he's got a cat, but it's kind of our cat now, you know, Spencer.
Spencer the cat?
No, we got him a really cool Russian blue cat, which is like the coolest cat I've ever had. And he doesn't, you know, he's a boy. He wants to do other things except take care of his cat. So it's our cat now. I was just bringing that into play because I don't want to leave Spencer out and talk about Jordan and insects. Did I mix it up a little bit? But I was talking about Jordan. If I leave Spencer, I'll get in trouble. But
we got you. Want to go rapid fire here?
Wow. Wow.
Just bring in a bunch of different people. We got any other questions for Amar?
Yeah, there's a couple more on here, and then I have one final question.
Okay, rapid fire. Hit it. Then we'll bring some other guys in.
David wants to know who you feel is your biggest rival on tour.
Oh, man.
This is an honesty circle on BTL. I don't know if you've listened to the show.
There's
you're not allowed to get out of quite, like, you have to honestly answer questions on BTL.
Me and Edwin got chest to chest a few times. That's pretty good. He's a cool guy, though. We're pretty fierce competitors on the water. So is me and Kevin. We get into it. In a good way, though. Not punching, almost.
That was a really oddly timed question.
Oh, man. Hey. I mean, right now or over the years? It's just
you want to go to the next question?
I mean, I don't care saying that. Biggest rivalry? I mean, I know for a while there, for me, it's an honor. I was like kind of Kevin's rivalry for a minute.
Do the West Coast guys have a rivalry?
Rivalry? Anybody in the West? Yeah, sort of.
You know, you get two guys from Taylor. The same state or hometown.
Some guys come up behind you. Some guys come up behind you or out to get you, and that feels like a rivalry when that happens. So, I guess I have a bunch of them.
That happens when you win.
Exactly. All right, TJ.
Yeah, you don't win, you're kind of the end.
Yeah, TJ wants to know, have you ever caught fish in the summertime in a lake that has a hot water discharge?
I'm sure I have, but I fish so many lakes with discharges, I can't remember. I know, and yeah, I mean, that's easy. I mean, Lake's got a hot water discharge, and I catch them around it, but usually I don't fish those that time of year. We'll check them out and catch some fish on them. It seems like the trash fish take over. And there's usually better areas than that, but I guess if the water's cold, definitely.
All right.
So they live there, right?
All right, Matt, last question. Let's say that Jeff Crete, who happens to be sitting over there, is 100%. He's not on the injured reserve. He's 100% healthy. You have him and Michael Neal walking to the octagon. Who's the winner?
Hey, well, I'll just step aside. Crete Neal can sit down and answer this one. Come on, get in if you want to.
Yeah.
Come on, get in here.
We let him go at it.
Who's the winner?
It's injured.
He said I'm good to get
him. That'd be a good one. I don't know.
I mean, we have seen Crete with the shirt off multiple times on national television.
He's
got some pecs.
He's got some pecs, and then arms are pretty big.
But
But Michael Neal also has
he's
that
young.
Look.
He's got the
and
young.
He's also
he's
in
young.
His 20s.
He's young. He's yeah, tough. Yeah. I think it'd be really interesting. We should maybe set it up sometime. Let's set it up sometime. Get some money on the line.
Might be able to do that. We'll see. All right, Matt, anything else for Aaron?
No, that's it. We can run through. We got the Elite Series, current Angler of the Year coming up. We've got
everybody.
Well, next we've got Russ Lane and Michael Neal. Same time on BTL.
All right, cool. All right, Aaron, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Sorry about this morning, but great to talk to you again. And we'll have you on the regular studio show after the season's over, man.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
That's in like 3
Peace
weeks.
Peace, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm out.
All right.
Hey,
Matthew,
DJ.
We're going to take a break. Come back right after this. Everybody stay tuned.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live, new from Lowrance.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
AFCO has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from AFCO.
The Heart of the Bass Cat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Bass Cat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Bass Cat. Feel the rush.
Aaron Martins here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE times 8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE times 8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019. The Duckett Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DuckettFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out. are back in the evening. We have some special guests on the show right now with Matthew. We've got Michael Neal and Russ Lane. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good, man. How's your pet giraffe going?
It's my favorite giraffe, man. Don't mess with a giraffe, all right?
Yeah, what was her name, April?
It was April and Oliver.
Oliver, that's right. That's right. I remember that story about you feeding her carrots.
That's right. That's right. I fed Oliver carrots and I fed April carrots. I also fed a monkey. I fed a goat. Let's see. What else did I feed?
I thought it was a chimpanzee. Pretty showed us a video of that earlier.
All right. No, man, I had a great time. That was a cool trip. Don't give me too much grief, all right? I would have wore a shirt that said, ask me about my favorite giraffe, but I didn't know you were going to harass me about it. Now, the question of the night. Right now is, Michael, were you able to get in a match of miniature golf at this event?
No. No, we didn't.
That's unfortunate.
You're here to help me make fun of Matt, so skipped out on that.
That's very – Matt, why are you so uncomfortable there, dude? What's going on? What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm just rolling with it.
Loosen up, buddy.
Yeah, listen to your stars.
Yeah.
He always gets nervous when he's sitting this close to Michael.
Michael Neal's an intimidating character, Mark. He really is.
All right, well, I'm going to let you kind of take over the interview here. Go ahead and ask Michael anything that you would like to ask him.
All right.
No, not anything.
Not anything?
No, not anything.
No, I'm curious. You know, you got Red Crest coming up here in a couple weeks after a great year on the Bass Pro Tour. And this media event that we've been at has been on the Mississippi River, the same river that Red Crest is going to be on, albeit, what, four pools away?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any advantage, and I know guys have done this, like when the Classic was on Grand, they went and fished a nearby lake that was similar to it or kind of something along that. Can you glean any information from being on the same fisher, even though each pool fishes differently?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, it's still, they're all connected. They've all got the similarities. They've all got backwaters. They've all got wing dams, so forth and so on. And it's been interesting to get out there this week and see how we're getting by. It's not just me, but everybody out here and catching some good fish too. So I'm actually going to stay up here all the way through the time for the Red Crest. I'm going to fish some of the different pools, just try and jump around, try and sample as much of it as I can and figure out what's going on. So I think absolutely it can help you. But at the same time, if those two pools are just a little bit different, if there's something else going on, it could really hurt you too. But I think overall it's going to help.
That's it? One question? That's all you got, Matthew?
No, I got it. Obviously, then you've got the inaugural Red Crest. There's 30 guys in this thing. Talk about what it's like being in kind of the first one and then also fishing championship. You fished, what, 6 Forestwood Cups?
Mm-hmm.
And there's anywhere from 50 to 56 anglers in that. So talk about fishing a championship with such a small field. Does that kind of change things, maybe give the anticipation a little bit higher, knowing that you've already basically eliminated half the field from a normal Classic or Cup?
Yeah, I mean, the Mississippi River, all these pools are so big that 30 guys, the lacrosse pool is just going to swallow everybody up. I mean, the Bass Pro Tour as a whole, just fishing 40 people on a day, it's amazing at how spread out we get. But yet, at some points, there's everybody will ball up in little places. But I think this one's going to swallow everybody up. But like you said, I mean, this is the first one. And going into the year, I had a lot of nervousness coming into the Bass Pro Tour from the FLW Tour, and it was a great year. So, I mean, somebody's got to be the first winner, and all 30 of us had a great year just to be able to make it, so I'm looking forward to it.
So then I'm sitting between two guys. Are you guys best friends?
Yeah.
You guys are best friends?
Sure.
Michael and Ross?
Yeah.
We just
they're good friends. And I asked this question. I asked this question because you know how it is, Mark. What do you do, you know, after a tournament? You call your buddy up, you talk to him about it. So, like, do you guys have conversations now that the season is over just about how things
Let me elaborate on the best. You ever seen the show Kenny Powers?
Yeah.
Like the little, like Stevie, his little buddy?
Yeah.
Like, that's... That's Michael Kidd. He's my little buddy, Stevie. So we make a good partnership.
Do you guys like sit down at the end of the year, compare notes, like, you know, how you know what you did, what he did, talk about how the year went as a whole at all? No, or do you just—
we're not allowed to do that.
No, when the year's over.
It's not over with.
The regular season is.
Basically all we do, like Andy Morgan rooms with us, basically all we do is me and Andy pick on Michael at every event, and the more we pick on him, the better he catches it.
And you must pick on him a lot, because have you seen his stats for the last 6 years?
That's what I'm talking about. He catches them better every day, the more we pick on him.
Hey, Russ, I have a question. All right, I want to try and set the record straight here. And, you know, Matt and I, we have a lot of studio time. We talk about a lot of stuff and everything. But I want you to clear the air on whether or not Michael likes Matt. Because I'm getting kind of the vibe that Michael doesn't really appreciate what the little grasshopper in the middle there does for the world of professional bass fishing. What are your thoughts on that?
Mikey's got a good poker face. He's hard to read. It's kind of like talking fishing with him. You don't know if he's lying to you or what. But I get the vibe he's not too sure about Panger yet. He don't trust the questions that's coming.
I'm sweating right now. That's okay.
I'm honest with
you. Oh, he's going to give you a hug, Matt.
It's all good. Are we ready for Drew Cook yet?
Is this awkward?
That question was kind of awkward.
I thought it was. Like, I mean, we're going to ask real questions?
Yeah. I've got questions on the instant feedback right now coming at you, Russ.
Right.
David wants to know, what is the biggest lesson that you learned from this year on the MLF?
This year?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You better be catching them. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. It's like if you think you are catching them fast enough, it's not going to be fast enough. It's like what I realized halfway through the season, where we're used to like trying to determine like what the cut line weight's going to be, which will tell you, you know, kind of what everybody's catching. Now it's how often do you need to get a bite. Like, you know, everybody talks about all the, you know, fish we were catching at Table Rock and they were small. But the thing was, to be competitive there, you finally realized you had to get a bite at least every 10 minutes. And probably that's one of the biggest adjustments that I realized throughout the year.
All right, Michael, what about you?
I would say how many fish are often in an area when you find a group of fish. I mean, it was like Lake Winnebago, for example. When you found fish, you got bites in a hurry, and you'd go for long stretches and you wouldn't. But in the past, I haven't really leaned on those areas and tried to milk them and get every bite I could. Mm-hmm. We'd get one or two bites and we just keep going. But now, when every fish counts, you really got to hunker down and catch what you can. So, I mean, it seemed like everywhere we went, there was way more fish after practice when I went back and really fished these places hard than what I was expecting.
Did the day and a half practice make a big difference? Because that's basically half of the time that you guys are used to. And I talked to some people on the water this week about, you know, maybe there were certain schools of fish that didn't get exploited on Winnebago, perhaps, you know, those big smallmouth that everyone expected, but just you had to completely regroup how you practiced in that shorter period of time?
I mean, that's not the way that I look at it. Is these guys, I mean, we had a day and a half, actually a day, and you practice from daylight to 4 o'clock. These guys just sped the game up even faster. And to me, I think we were catching them a little bit better because with 3 days of practice, these guys process these lakes so fast that it actually is detrimental to the fishing when you're in tournament time. So the lakes aren't quite as beat up going into the first or second day of the event like they were with the three-day practice format.
Let me ask you this, along the same lines then, does mapping in a shorter practice become more important than sonar?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it's every tournament in this, if you look at the guys that really excelled, it was somebody that figured out as the tournament went on, what was happening. I mean, it was something that, and you're not going to be able to a lot of times go out there and idle around and look for places or graph. So you've got to be able to look at your electronics, look at your mapping, and go pick out those areas to run the pattern during the tournament that you might not even been at in practice.
So you had a great year, top 10 in the points. One of, I believe, four anglers who made all four cups. Three or four anglers who made all four cups. How often did you put your boat in the water and find something right off the hopper that carried you through to the tournament, or was there a lot of discovery during the tournament of fish that you really didn't know were there and figured it out as you went on?
The only one that I think I really landed on it right off the bat was Chickamauga, but
that,
I mean,
that being literally home, have yeah. a tackle store on Chickamauga.
And the rest of them, I don't think I figured it out.
Hey,
you, nice.
This was your question.
I know.
I'm just answering
Ross, same thing. I mean, how often did you put the boat in and
never.
Never?
No.
So it was just on the fly then?
Yeah, pretty much. I like the last few events when the fish got out or got in summer patterns, it was a seemed like it was a little bit easier to drive straight to them. But, you know, during the earlier tournaments, it kind of developed because, I mean, those early springtime tournaments develop day by day anyway. So,
all right. One final question from the instant feedback, Matthew, and then we'll let him go for both of them. Brad in Tennessee wants to know one key tip that few weekend anglers know on finding good schools of fish.
Did they need to know?
Yeah.
Just one tip, yeah.
That few people know.
I mean, you got to think of it as like in odds. If you're looking for off school fish, like put your rod down, I turn my Garmin electronics on, and I cover water idling and looking and looking. And if you want to up your percentages, just look for breaks. Like I like to look for a lot of secondary stuff. Like if it's connected to the bank, like a long point runs out and it's got a channel that kicks off of it, go to it and idle over it and go to the next one. At least cover.
So fish less.
Yeah, yeah. Cover a lot of water on your graph.
Yeah, Michael? I mean that's one way, and another one would just be to find just your high percentage areas, whether it's a brush pile or a rock pile, just these subtle differences. Everybody goes out there and wants to go fish a ledge or whatever it may be, but those fish are going to bust up and start singling off, especially when they get heavily pressured somewhere close by, whether just something different. Like I said, a rock pile, brush pile, a little high spot, just some kind of those little differences, even the places you think you know by heart. Go back to them and look at them and look around the area and see where a few fish may pull over to.
All right, there you have it, Brad. All right, my last question. Would either one of you guys go 300 miles offshore with Crete and do a little ocean fishing?
Nope.
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't get past the first sandbar with
him. All right, Matt. Hey, guys, thank you so much for taking time out, coming on the show. We're going to take a quick break. We're not doing a commercial break. We'll just take a quick break, come back with Drew Cook, right?
Yes.
Yep. All right. Hey, you guys take care. Be careful. Michael, good luck next week or the next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
There. And we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, man. Say hey to April for me.
Thank you. Jeez. All right, we are back, and our next guest to join us, Drew Cook. Drew, how are you doing, man?
I can't complain. Well, wasn't doing any good.
Been quite the season for you, and you know, we talk a little bit about how much fishing remains, but man, you got to be really happy with your performance so far.
Oh yeah, you know, obviously where I am right now, going into the last few events, you couldn't ask for a better place. I mean, I guess you could be, you know, in second behind by 1 point, but
I'd still rather be in first.
I mean, yeah, I take every point I can whenever I can get them.
All right, I want to ask you a question. How many media events you've been to before? This your very first one?
Very first one.
How long have you watched some of these guys and kind of modeled some of the stuff you've done after some of these guys that you're working with, I guess, that you're teammates with now for a long time?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a cool experience to be able to be here and,
oh, yeah,
and see these guys and talk to them. Just kind of give us your overall thoughts on what it's like to kind of see this side of the industry. We had Mike McClellan on the first night with a really good show about how he's been with Spro for 15 years, kind of how he developed some of his signature series baits, and he kind of went back to when he got started with it. You're kind of in that early part of your career now with obviously a lot of success with four tournaments left on the Elite Series. So just kind of talk about what you're thinking, business aspect, fishing aspect, talking with some of these guys. Who, how old are you?
Just turned 25.
Some of these guys have been doing it longer than you've been alive.
Yeah, like Creed. But I honestly had no idea that you can get so much stuff done in 2 days. The way they do these things, you know, you get your little time slots, and it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know, they got four or five different things that you get to go do, and this is stuff that they'll have all year long. I had no idea that they did it all in 2 days. I guess I was a little naive, you know, that they did this, you know, one whole day for this, one whole day for that type stuff. I didn't know how fast this was.
Obviously, you know, John Cruise, Cliff Persh, you've been competing against them all year, but you know, other guy, Aaron Martins and guys like that. Is this the first time you've even met them?
Oh yeah, dude, I was talking with Louis Stout today on the water, and I was like, man, I still wake up like every morning and have to like pinch myself. Cause I mean, I just wanna make sure this isn't a dream. And like, we had a meeting in Birmingham. I was sitting next to Bernie Schultz and Rick Cullen, like people that I've watched my whole life. This week, you know, I came here to this writers conference, and like, it was hard not to ask for an autograph from Crete or Aaron Martins or Brent Ayler, stuff like that, you know. But I mean, it's awesome now being, you know, kind of in the same category almost.
We talk a lot about confidence. Obviously, you expected to catch him if you're fishing at this level, but did you ever picture yourself leading the Angler of the Year race with three regular season events and then the Angler of the Year championship left?
No, I'm not going to be ignorant and sit here and tell you, oh yeah, I expected to be right here. I'm right on track. No, I mean, I expected to do good. I've exceeded my expectations. You know, I had a couple goals that I set coming into this that I felt weren't really easy goals. I wanted to make the Classic. I wanted to win Rookie of the Year because it's the only shot that I have. I wanted to make every top 35 cut, which I haven't done because of Winyah Bay, and two top 12s, and I wanted to win an event.
All right, let's face it. You're from Florida, right? You're talking like grass, shallow water, Florida strain, largemouth. The next event coming up, St. Lawrence River, probably not your cup of tea.
I mean, no, but I mean, I haven't fished any. The only places so far this year that I've fished have been the St. John's River and Winyah Bay. Everywhere else we've gone, it was the first time I'd ever seen these places. And I think that that's the purest way to fish, the easiest way to fish, because there's no preconceived notions. You're not chasing, you know, what you think should happen or what should be going on, or you don't know that the fish here only eat whatever, you know, that the local people say. You just go out there and you do whatever you do, you use what you're confident in, and you fish how you fish and not how somebody tells you to fish, or if you went and pre-practice, you know, how to
try to duplicate what you did over a month ago.
All right. So now do you do a lot of gleaning and going back and watching the Bassmaster live replays to have an idea with it, or?
Yeah, you know, I'll do that. I mean, I definitely study a lot.
Okay.
Like whenever we get our schedule, take a notebook. Each lake gets a section of the notebook. Any of my experience that I've had on it, I, you know, put in there, and then I go back, see FLW bass and now MLF stuff. If there was an event there, you know, try to look at all whatever press is there, and then watch as many videos on Bassmaster or FLW or YouTube or anything like that, and you know, take notes the whole time to just kind of give you an idea what to expect, and really to get every lake is, or most lakes, they have a area of the lake where it's statistically one at. There is an area there that is normally where it gets one at. So I take that. I know kind of what the area is. I spend like my 2 days of practice there, and then I spend my half a day doing my own thing off the wall, trying to find something that might not be as good as where it's statistically one at, but everyone else knows that it should be one down there. And if this isn't quite as good, but these people cannibalize themselves, you can end up winning an event doing that.
So statistically, how often do you end up in the 2 days, and how often do you end up fishing the off the wall stuff?
I'd probably say about 60% off the wall stuff.
Really?
Yep.
So more often than not, the last half day where you go off and do your own thing is where you start on Thursday morning.
Or like something you're driving over a bridge or something, you look at it, you're like, man, I gotta go check that stuff out. End up going there.
Wow.
In your truck.
Yeah.
You know, that's how Cliff Crochet had his first second place finish.
Yeah.
Driving over a bridge, he went lily pads.
Yeah.
And then he drove in the tournament and caught him on a frog.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, Drew, I have one question, and I know it's getting late. You've had a long day, so I'm really curious. Sometime this year, with all the success that you've had, has there been one moment? It could have been a fish that you caught, a fish that you lost, something that happened in the boatyard. I don't know. I want to know if you've had that moment where you just stepped back and said, I cannot believe that just happened.
I've got two of those for you. At Fork on the second day, you know, I had 25, 14 or something like that, but I pulled up to my main shell bed and I threw a Ruku shad out there and I hooked Moby Dick, like somewhere in between 8 to 11 or 8 to 10. I'm not gonna say it wasn't an 11 pounder, but it was a magnum.
Big.
And it came off, and it could have got real ugly real bad. My next cast I caught a 6-14, and then the cast after that I jumped off another 7 pounder, and then the next cast after that I lost another one over 5, and it was just one of those things that you had to literally sit back, take a breath, and, you know, obviously change some more treble hooks, bigger ones, smaller ones, round ones, EWG ones, whatever, you know, anything that you could do. But it wasn't the hooks that were doing it. It was the way they were eating the bait. But yeah, I had to sit back and try to talk myself off the ledge, honestly. You know, don't commit suicide on that day.
Yeah.
You know, don't let this ruin how your day is going to go. And then, you know, at probably Hartwell, I after the second day, you know, I caught the biggest bag of the tournament, and, you know, after I got done weighing the fish, I didn't know quite what I had, and my bass track was not working because I was out of service or whatever. But I knew I caught them pretty good, and I knew it was probably enough. But after he said the weight, you know, standing there on stage, and if that was one I kind of like took a mental picture of, like, I'll remember this.
That's cool. That's very cool. All right, Matthew, anything else?
No, I think that'll cover it. It's been about an hour and 15 minutes, so.
It's been really, really good stuff, man. Drew, you're going to hang out and close the show with us, okay? All right, Matthew, you're headed to the final day of the FLW Championship, correct?
Yeah, headed to the FLW Cup on Hamilton. They just wrapped up practice today. Some decent fish getting caught. Still think it's going to be rather difficult in that derby. Not a slugfest. But I'm really interested to see, you know, only a couple quote-unquote locals in that tournament. But I'm really interested to see who's going to come in with a big bag and then carry that through the tournament, because I think that's how it's going to be won, a 17, 18-pound bag followed with 10, 11-pound days either surrounding it or before it or after it. So a real grind, and I would really like to see if Thrift can get the job done this year. I mean, yeah. You've seen what he's done in the Cups with all of his top 10s and his statistics, and I think he kind of has one coming, and this one's kind of setting up in his wheelhouse with the running gun in shallow, catch one off a brush pile, one out from a shallow dock, one on a popper, one on a buzz bait, that type of deal.
All right, we're going to find out. So back in studio on Monday, we will summarize what happens in Arkansas. And check out the website. We'll have the list of guests for next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week. Looking forward to getting you back in studio, Matthew. Be safe, and I'll talk to you probably Saturday or Sunday.
All right, thanks, dude.
All right, I'm headed to the Ike Foundation event that's going to take place on the Delaware River, I believe, in Philly. So
there's a number of pros there. I think I saw Dave Mansu, but a bunch of guys. Are you going to that, John? No, John Cruz is here. I figured he just likes to travel back and forth across the country in 48 hours. So I figured there's an event on a coast. He might do that before he goes up north.
Yeah. So I will get some good stuff from that event. A great, great event for the Ike Foundation. Looking forward to that. So back here on Monday, that's it. Drew, best of luck to you the remainder of the season. We'll talk to you soon. Matthew, we're out of here.
Thanks, guys.